Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
Welcome to the show, and I'm thrilled to have with me today a true professional services marketing legend. It's Lee Fredrickson. Hello to you, sir.
Thank you very much for having me.
You put some terrific stuff out from Hinge. How did it come about? Tell us a bit about your background and your expertise.
Well, so I'm a behavioral psychologist by training, and I got into the whole marketing thing through public education and public health direction and fell in love with marketing. In the end, professional services was the most challenging type of marketing there were, so that's where I ended up.
Why is it so challenging, Lee, in professional services?
Well, if you look at it just on the surface, when Ford or Volvo builds a new car, they don't have to be concerned with whether the car comes in with a hangover or is going through a divorce or was asleep in the business development meeting. So you have a product and a service that keeps changing, and it's very complex, and it's typically tailored to individual situations. So it's not a single thing you have to sell. Plus, a lot of people went into the professional services accounting for a reason, because they didn't want to go into marketing.
You're right. They're very technically brilliant people, but often struggle to sell themselves and their products and services, don't they?
Yes, they do indeed.
Now, accounting, is it any different to any other professional services sector, or can we put them all under that umbrella and talk about marketing generally?
That's a great question. One of the big differences in professional services is whether they are compliance-driven or whether they are need-driven.
Okay.
If they're compliance-driven, generally the marketing task is easier, and that's the way accounting was for many years. However, accounting firms now are becoming so much more complex, so they have a combination of both compliance-driven, usual taxes and regulatory issues, as well as the business issues. So they're becoming more and more dependent on marketing over time.
Yeah. How has the marketing game changed over the years? Because you've been in this game a while. Back in the day, it would be old school, wouldn't it? Maybe a little bit of PR or a traditional advertising, even mail shots in networking, but the game's changed, hasn't it?
It has indeed. You know, when I started in it, it was the rainmaker model. It was an individual dependence on your contacts, your business contacts you develop, and it was all based on referrals. It was usually geographically driven in your local market. Almost all of those assumptions have changed. People are less likely to have someone who's just close and more likely to find someone who can address the issues, familiar with their industry, familiar with their problem, solved it before, and distance is becoming much, much less of an issue. We're finding more and more that the distance is just collapsing.
Yeah, and the old-fashioned accountant, bank manager that would visit you and knew everyone in your town, they're a relic, aren't they? A thing of the past.
Well, I don't think personal relationships will ever become unimportant,
sure,
but they become less and less important as other things become more relevant to the selection of who you're going to work with.
Now, how easy or difficult is it for an accounting firm of any size to differentiate themselves? Because in the eyes of some clients, one accountant is much the same as another, but I guess you disagree with that.
Well, the biggest barrier to differentiating yourself in some ways is the one that lies between your ears.
Right.
And that is because if you start out thinking you're just like everyone else, you will act just like everyone else. There's basically two types of differentiators. There's the kinds of differentiators that you discover. You do a research on your clients and you find out, wow, we do something that's different than other people. We didn't really fully realize how important that was and how different that is. Those are usually kind of soft issues like responsiveness, relationships, how you approach consulting with them, those kinds of things. And then there's a kind of differentiators that you decide on. You make a business decision. We're going to specialize in this market. We're going to focus on this geography, this industry, this service. So it's a combination of those two things. And the things you can decide upon are very powerful. So the only thing that's really preventing you from deciding upon them is yourself.
Mm. What are some of the mistakes that accounting firms make in their marketing?
The biggest mistake is to assume that the market works the way it did 20 or 30 years ago. Clearly, it's changed dramatically. And you still hear, oh, when I was growing up, this is the way we do it, so everyone should do that. that. The second mistake they make is they overestimate their buyers in terms of how well they understand their firm, how well they understand how a service might be used to solve a particular business problem. So really understanding where the client is actually at and how they're viewing the problem, how they're viewing the issue, I think is the key to unlocking that. And once you understand where the client has come from, then it's relatively straightforward to educate them and bring them to the point where they understand how your service can help them.
Do you find that professional firms and accountants in particular think they're differentiating, but they're really not? Because they'll talk about their great service, their great culture, their great brand, but really a lot of firms have that, don't they?
They do, and a lot of firms say that because that seems like the things to say. All the other people are saying it, so I must too. There's a little test, sometimes it's a little bit humorous, but you think, would someone say the opposite of what I'm saying? In other words, until you run across a firm that says, we have kind of average people, and it takes us a little bit longer to learn it, we'll probably make a few mistakes, but you know, it'll end up taking us longer, so you'll pay more than going with someone who knows this better than us. You know, when you hear a firm say that, then saying you have good people, then that's a differentiator, you know, but no one says that. And so obviously, it's not really a differentiator.
Yeah, and I'm fond of the phrase, being good used to be a differentiator, now it's just a qualifier.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There is that assumption. And if you're not good, what are you in the business for?
Exactly. Now, let's handle some terms, Lee. When we talk about marketing, people listening will have lots of different definitions of that. Now, you are the expert on this. How are we going to define the word?
Well, marketing for us is, in more of the classic sense, it's helping understand which markets you go to, how you speak to those markets, which services you offer, how you price those services, and results in the generating of a qualified opportunity.
Right.
So that's sort of where marketing ends from our classic definition. Then generally sales picks up. Now, in the professional services, marketing and sales are so interrelated as addressed by clients so that the marketing and sales is often just referred to as business development. I find a lot of firms informally refer to that combination, or they call sales business development and still refer to marketing. So that difference, that imprecision in the language is one of the challenges.
I was going to ask you about that. My business is called the Business Development Academy, and we're UK-based and we train accountants to win work, but we don't focus so much on the marketing stuff. And it's often difficult to get them to see the differences between marketing, which often supports business development, and
yes,
then the business development, which takes up those interested leads and then turns those into clients. Would you go on with that as a construct?
Yes, I think so. Marketing helps you get up to the point where you're generating an opportunity, and business development helps turn that opportunity into a client.
That's a very, very good way of putting it. Now, at Hinge, you're very research-led, aren't you, Lee? You've taken that decision to put out some stellar thought leadership stuff. How did that decision come about to lead with the research?
Well, it was actually very simple. We started out saying we only want to offer services that are actually effective. We don't care what we offer. We just want to understand what's effective, and we will develop the skills to offer those services. So that was the fundamental business impetus. And when we started out with the research, we shared some of that research, and we found out that sharing that research was important. And we were actually early in on the front end of content marketing wave that's starting, but it really came from the notion of doing things differently than our competitors were doing, where a lot of the people around it would do research and then they would charge people for that research. They would sell it. So we started giving it away. And by doing that, that allowed people to get to know who we are, how we think about the problems, what kind of solutions we have. And it's been very, very successful for us.
Yeah. Now, one of your recent thought leadership pieces was a marketing budget benchmark study. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. One of the challenges with developing a marketing budget for accounting is just about every firm does it a little bit different. So there's no set things that are included in your budget and things that aren't. And that was a big challenge for the Association of Accounting Marketing, which is marketers in mid to large accounting firms.
Right.
So we worked with them to develop an approach to look at marketing budgets in a much more granular way. And what we have found is that by looking deep, you begin began to see the pattern of what works for accounting firms and what doesn't. So we've divided it into firms that grow fast, the high growth firms, and firms that aren't growing, and looked at what's the difference between how they market.
I thought that was a fascinating way to divide up those two audiences and to just define a high growth firm for us.
Well, a high growth firm was the highest 20% of our sample. We divided the sample into the slowest growing 20%, the fastest growing 20%, and the 60% in the middle.
And you said that over 100 firms with $3 billion annual revenues exceeded. So this is a healthy sample size. And what were the headline findings?
Well, one of the things that is probably the most important finding from a partner or owner perspective is that the equity partners in high growth firm generate almost $1 million more per year in revenue than do the low growth firms.
Goodness.
$1 million per partner more. So the low growth firms are about $1.3 million and the high growth firms are $2.3 million.
That's significant.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is, especially if you're a partner. That should get your attention.
We know what drives the partners very often. Are you an advocate that the partners should be doing marketing or doing a lot of the business development, or do you see marketing as an engine that makes the selling bit easy at the end?
What a great question that is.
I've got loads of them. That's what we do on the podcast.
Yeah. I think the right model for today is marketing as a team sport. You know, right. We mentioned earlier the individual rainmaker, which really is very difficult to sustain. So it works best, I think, when each person has a role in marketing. So for example, there may be one partner who's great at writing things and writing articles, but is just a complete washout when it comes to networking. So why would we be forcing that partner to do networking? Just like the gregarious extrovert who is great at networking, but doesn't do a good job of organizing his thoughts for writing.
You make an excellent point. I agree with you on the idea that everyone in a firm should be good at business development or marketing. But the point is that we've got different personalities, different weapons, different skills,
yes,
different styles. So there's a way for everyone to go out there, have some conversations and create some opportunities for a firm, right?
Indeed. Indeed there is. And even if those conversations are online conversations, one of the interesting things we found in one of our studies when we looked at young people being recruited to firms, there was a significant proportion of them that were looking for the opportunity to represent their firm on social media.
Right.
And then you've got the partners who don't want to do that, don't want to fool with it. So why don't we give it to the people who want to do it, give them the tools and training they needed to be effective at it, and have everybody play their role in the overall marketing and business development culture of the firm.
Mm. And you consult to firms all over the world, Lee. What would you say makes a good accountant great?
I would say their ability to translate their insights into business language. What are the business implications of your insights, and how do you communicate them to the client? That is where the value lies. It's not always where you get the work. That is often more about, can you show that you have the expertise to solve the problem at hand, the problem of the day? But then once you've done that, that opens the door to how much insight and how much value can I get? And often the reason someone chose a firm is not the reason they stay with them. The reason they stay with them is because of what they learn, and they become a trusted advisor. But no one goes out there saying, I need a trusted advisor. It's just not human nature.
Yeah. How coachable do you feel people like accountants are as a race? Because we know they've passed technical qualifications. We know that they're smart. But in terms of ongoing development, learning these skills, do you feel that they're teachable?
Yes, to a certain extent they are. They're certainly more teachable than marketers.
Okay.
Yes. The reason I say that is that for many of them, they don't see themselves as marketers. So they're willing to be influenced or learn from someone who does. Now, of course, you have, as in any profession, you have some group of people who are not open to any new ideas for any particular reason from anyone.
Yeah.
You know, we've all met that person. But as a group, I find them pretty open.
Yeah. When you look at the state of the accounting profession, do you feel it's in a good, healthy shape? Is it a good time to be in an accounting firm?
It's a great time to be a bold accountant.
Ooh.
It is a very dangerous time to be a conventional accountant.
I love that. that? Just unpack that a bit for us.
Well, the industry is changing and it still provides essential value and has the opportunity to continue to provide that essential value, that understanding of business facts, business data, business numbers. No one does a better job of putting that into context than a well-trained account. And the challenge is finding how do you organize that and how do you deliver it? How do you wrap that in with automation, for example, automation of the routine stuff that you used to get paid for by the hour, by the time? On the other hand, if you're still stuck in the old pay for the time model.
Yeah, we've had Ron Baker on the show and a few other pricing experts talking about the crime that is the billable hour and timesheets and how it's wrecking things. I'm sure you go along with that.
Yes, indeed we do.
Take a look at this study, Lee, and we find that the mix of marketing activities has changed over the years. Tell us about how it was back in the day, just to remind us of the good old days. And then tell us about some of the things that are working now in professional services marketing.
Well, in the good old days, I think it's probably fair to say marketing was primarily an administrative support function that helped a person schedule appointments or put together an event, those kinds of things. That was really what marketing was.
Right.
And generally, the people that got into it were someone who had an administrative role and, you know, wasn't in the room when they decided who was going to do it, something that they fell into. These days, that's completely changed. Hmm. Now, the marketing is someone who has the ability to understand how the world is changing. They have to be familiar with technology. They have to be able to deal with a wide variety of different tools and systems. We looked recently at how much of the buying decision happens online versus face-to-face.
Okay.
And it was very interesting because what we found was about 70% of the buying decisions, understanding, do I have a problem I need to solve? Who are the different people who could possibly help me? Which is the firm I want to work with? About 70% of that decision is made with information you're getting online. Mm-hmm. So obviously, if you're not active there and you're not where clients are looking, you're not going to put your firm in the best light.
Yeah. And you make the startling revelation in your executive summary that I've seen of this report that the old ways of marketing are now drying on the vine. And one in five accounting marketeers recommend reducing the old school stuff, the print ads, the sponsorship expenses, and channeling that money into social media, SEO, and video.
Mm-hmm. And internal training. We asked the high growth firms, what do you want to spend more on? And creating educational content and advertising, those are the kinds of things that they want to spend more on, that are very targeted towards showing people what you know.
Yeah.
And they want to spend less on the traditional marketing materials and the events and parties for clients that they often do, and in particular, the discretionary marketing funds that partners often have, which end up usually being spent on sponsorships that produce no results.
Well, that's a big call, isn't it? Because that's the old school way, but ROI is the term of the moment, isn't it? We're always looking for how is this going to count? How do you feel marketers are at measuring ROI with their activity?
Poorly, I would say. It is a real challenge because most marketing happens with multiple touches from multiple formats. You know, I was on a phone with a prospect just yesterday, and I found out, well, they had heard from someone else who had attended a webinar that we did at a particular place. And, you know, it was two or three bounces before it got to the person who actually was relevant. Mm. If we would have looked at that event, because we got no direct leads from that, we would have said that was a bust.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's going to bring us a new client. So that is a challenge. And to a certain extent, what you need to do is just understand where the clients are looking for information and find a way to be in that channel.
Yeah.
That is probably the clearest route to a decent return on your investment.
That's an excellent point. I was chatting to a marketing executive in Sony just recently, and I said to mm-hmm. them, where do you guys show up online, social media-wise? You said wherever our customers are, that's where we show up because we have to be.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's more and more what accounting firms are going to be faced with.
But the problem with something like social media, Lee, is that it's a void, isn't it? It will suck every minute, every ounce of time and energy you give it. And often that effort is not strategic, it's not focused, it's not targeted. So what can we learn from that and how do we do it better?
Well, I think what we can learn is don't do things that are unfocused and
sure.
It's going to be a waste of time. time. Surprisingly, it's actually not that challenging to find out where your clients are on social media, for example. Right. You can go to their profiles on LinkedIn and see which social media they're on. You can look them up. You can search for them on different things. You can ask them when you're talking to them. You know, it's not a secret where they are. It's just that we don't put in the minimum amount of effort it takes to understand that, so we can target our efforts better, more precisely.
There was a recent debate on Facebook where an accounting marketeer had said, I like seeing accountants put up more videos on LinkedIn and Facebook, but they're getting drawn into recognition and worship from their peers and their friends rather than actually getting eyeballs and comments from suspects, potential clients. Would you go along with that?
I think to a certain extent, yes. We end up going where we're comfortable, where it's not challenging. One of the things we always tell clients is the situation you want to be in is a room full of potential clients when you're the only accountant there.
Yes.
That's the situation you're looking for. So how can you get close to that?
How do you cut through the noise, Lee?
Relevance is how you cut through the noise. Okay. Relevance. It gets down to that. You know, it used to be in the old days, a few years ago, we would say, well, be sure to ask your client what keeps you up at night. Well, you know, if you're asking a client that, you're way, way too late now. If you have to ask that, you're out of contention. You should know what keeps them up at night. Better still, you should be able to tell them, I know this is what keeps you up at night, but this is what should be keeping you up at night, because this is actually a more fundamental problem. And that's what I think people often miss, is that you have to have a genuine understanding of your client's situation to be really helpful to them.
And these days, with all the information out there in the public domain, there's no excuse not to be informed.
Exactly. Exactly.
Where do you stand on the term social selling, Lee?
It's a great concept, and I think it's something that is a part of any overall business development strategy. Just like networking is, basically anything that we used to do face-to-face now has an online analog. Networking, social media, seminars, webinars. And the question is understanding where your clients are on that mix so you can be where they are, where they're looking.
So in this research that you did around high growth firms, you found that they spend proportionally more on their marketing budget than the lower growing firms.
Yes, yes. And that's relatively recent. Up until just 2 or 3 years ago, they always spent the same, high growth and low growth firms. So I found that their spending was almost identical. They just spent it in different ways.
Right.
Now we're seeing some firms that are beginning to spend more. And I think one of the reasons is they're moving from some of these commodity compliance services to more advisory kinds of services, and that increases their marketing costs.
Yeah. Are you seeing a rise in customer acquisition costs? It's costing more to get through to people and land a client, isn't it?
It is over time. What we see the flip side of that that's driving it is there's a decrease in client loyalty. And, you know, on the surface, well, why would that be? Because there's also an increase in the relevance and value people are getting. So your clients are feeling, wow, I'm getting something that's very relevant, very valuable, yet they're not loyal. And I think what that really is the rise of the specialist. You find someone who can solve a particular problem. And then later on at a point, you have another problem, so you find someone who can solve that problem. Now, of course, the irony is sometimes the person who solved the first problem would be just fine for solving the second one. You just didn't know it.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see that there is a lot more move to educate your existing clients about how you can help them.
Yeah.
But that is every bit as important as educating the people who are not yet your clients.
Yeah, so true. You mentioned earlier that channeling budget into internal training is a big part of the mix. So what does that involve?
If I would characterize the things people are targeting for internal training, some of them are business development skills. Others are related to kind of marketing, if you will, let's say training in social media skills and how do I support the growth of the firm? What role can I have in that? As we see a generational change and a change in the understanding of marketing sweeping through the accounting, I think there's going to be a need for ongoing education.
Yeah. How best can accountants and professional people generally liaise with their marketing department and say, right, this is what you're doing, this is what I'm doing, and let's work it together to bring in the business? Because there's overlap, surely.
Yeah, there is. And that's a great point. And what we're seeing is some of the most advanced firms are really treating their marketing function as an integral, important part of the firm. They're putting them on the partner track. They're getting people who have a depth of experience. They're staffing the marketing firms. And others are still stuck in the old model where marketing is an administrative cost to be minimized. Mm. So depending on which model, I think it really has big implications for the future of a firm.
Yeah. Are you something of a visionary, Lee? If I were to ask you what's coming up for professional firms in the marketing area over the next 5 to 10 years, how confident would you be in making a prediction?
Well, it depends on how precise a prediction you are. Yes, there's two or three things that I think we can be fairly certain of. That the move towards digital will continue. We see it happening already. And I think the move towards automation of the marketing functions, both in the marketing automation and sales enablement area, we'll see those continue to mature. And I think we'll see a flowering of different business models, different configurations of firms, where a law firm is offering consulting services and an accounting firm is offering legal services, and both of them are offering data security services. That's the world we're entering into, where there's much more confusion and subtlety. So if anything, it puts a greater premium on being able to clearly articulate and communicate your value proposition.
Mm. Now, you've been doing this a while. You still remain hugely passionate about what you do, and you show no signs of hanging up your boots. What drives you, Lee?
You know, I get such excitement out of seeing people develop insight and understanding of their situation and learning from that and beginning to apply that. That's what drew me to the university and research in the first place, is finding out things that people thought might be true but didn't know for sure, and getting the insight from them. It's just tremendously rewarding.
Mm. What frustrates you? There's no perfect job, is there?
Well, I don't know. Some sound pretty good to me. You know, I often thought that person who drives a little electric golf cart through the airport, I thought, gee, that sounds like fun, doesn't it?
That is a cool job, definitely.
Yeah, it seems like a cool job, yeah. I think the thing that frustrates me is people who won't learn, people who are impervious to data or impervious to reality. And that's the only frustrating thing.
Yeah. You're a man of strong beliefs. Is there anything you believe deeply that other people think is crazy?
The beliefs I have about how things are going to change, it seems like that seems odd to some people. Not too long ago, I had someone from a very large international accounting firm say, you know, all this stuff about how the market is going to change and how automation is going to impact it, I don't see it. You know, I see electric cars going on the road. I see self-driving cars coming, but I don't see this automation. And I think sometimes we're just too close to things to step back and see the larger picture. Mm. And I think that's where when people look at something I say and think it's not reality, I believe they just aren't looking at what's actually happening.
Yeah. And how teachable are you, Lee? Have you changed your mind on anything over the last few years?
Well, just about everything. Yeah, you know, show me a number, show me the data. And that's what drives me. And understanding what the data is saying to you and unpacking that, that's one of my passions.
Well, Lee, if people want to have a conversation with you, find out more about the excellent things that Hinge do, what's a good way for them to reach you?
Hingemarketing.com as our website, or I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, Lee Fredrickson. No one can spell my name correctly, so Hinge Marketing is probably your best shot.
Sure. And what do you think your legacy might be, Lee, as you approach your latter years here?
I think if anything, it's going to be about research-driven strategy impacting the professional services.
Mm. Beautifully succinct. Lee, this has been terrific. Would you leave us with some words of encouragement for the accountants and the professionals generally listening that want to make the most of the new world that we live in and win more business, market more efficiently?
What I would say is that just remember, this is not about the technology. It's not about which channel. It's not about which clever phrase. It's about, do you really understand your client? And if you really understand the situation they're in and you empathize with that situation, you will end up in the right place with your marketing and business development.
Well, Lee Fredrickson of Hinge, that's been world class. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.